Welcome, dear listener, to episode 18 of Dirty Thoughts, Let's Talk. If you came for the dirty thoughts that make you tingle down there, you might be in the wrong place. However, if you came to find out how to manage those dirty thoughts, keeping you from being the best possible version of yourself and would like to have some fun while doing it, then you are indeed in the right place. I'm your host and founder of The Clean Thinkers, Mike Marcella, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in to our formerly weekly and now every other week podcast. I genuinely appreciate you coming along in this journey with me and the rest of the Clean Thinkers community. Today, I'm going to start the episode by confiding something in you, my dear listeners. My confession is that when I record podcasts, I use a lot of notes. Now, I'm sure this isn't a huge surprise, given how much data I cite and how many studies I reference. I mean, if I didn't have notes, then I suppose I'd have to be making up a lot of the shit that I share with you. So obviously, it goes without saying, I think a bit, that I use a lot of notes. I have a lot of things referenced when I record a podcast. But today, though, I'm going to try something completely different. And specifically, I'm going to use almost no notes when I talk about today's subject matter. So what I'm doing, in essence, is sharing my own perspective on it, and which, of course, is largely based on objectivity, but it has to, by its nature, then consist of some subjective elements as well, because it's my perspective, it's my opinion on some of these things, my take, if you will. So further, you'll see that the subjects themselves have a lot of gray area, and that gray area, it's kind of the whole point behind today's episode, because this is our fourth edition of the Dirty Talk series, which you'll recall is kind of our free-form style of episodes, whereas with our tenets and principles of Clean Thinkers, we talk about the material out of the book, we're talking about clean thinking at its base level, what it is. And then, of course, we have our theme-based podcast, and then we have, again, what today is our fourth edition of Dirty Talk. And so today is really going to be very free form. I'm not going to have any detailed notes. I'm not going to have any sort of scripting whatsoever. This is just off the cuff. I'm going to talk about these topics. I have a few bullet points just so I don't forget which specific topics I want to talk about. And I'm just going to kind of ramble. And I hope it's bearable. And I hope that you guys can handle me just kind of going off the cuff like this. And so the gray area that I want to talk about in today's episode is the gray area that we humans so desperately try and avoid for pretty much every single fucking aspect of our lives, because we can't stand ambiguity. We want simple answers. We want things to be definitive. But in reality, things rarely are definitive. So today, we're going to talk through a few topics that perfectly represent that battle between our desire for certainty and where reality actually lies. All right, so let's get into it. And actually, before we get into it, this got me thinking as I was going through the introduction that we've kind of talked about this a little bit in previous episodes, but not directly, but kind of indirectly, by proxy, if you will. We've talked about this during the religion episode, because there were two, but a lot of the background and reasoning why we came up with religions to begin with was to help answer all those big questions in life that we don't like to have unanswered. It gives us meaning. It gives us purpose. It gave us a history before we had the understanding necessary to understand where our history really came from and where we humans originated from and where the universe originated from, without a story that required some sort of supernatural creator. So ambiguity, fear of discomfort, fear of ambiguity, that's a big reason why we have religion to begin with. And that's another reason why I also mentioned this in the religion episode, that people who are religious are often going to be more susceptible to falling victim to conspiracy theories and conspiratorial thinking, because what that lack of ambiguity does, and always having this reinforcement of having no ambiguity in your life and having these, always having a connection, always having a definitive answer, you can put it back to a creator and what have you. But what that does is makes you even more uncomfortable with discomfort, such that you will seek out answers where none exist. And a perfect example of that is conspiracy theory. So anyway, we did talk about this a little bit, so I went off on a tangent there. Like I said, that's pretty much what today's episode is about. But that was not a topic that I really wanted to touch on. But I think it's important to note that there are big parts of our life, like religion, that largely come about because of our inability to be comfortable with ambiguity and not having answers for everything and not everything being so simple or black and white. And so to begin our planned topics in earnest, I want to take a step back, several steps back to something I spoke about in previous episodes. So if you're a new listener, you might not remember this, but I've never been a big fan of electric vehicles. And my thinking has grown on that, which we'll touch on in a bit. But at the time when I had spoken about this and the example that I was talking about, what had happened was I was working in the specialty chemical industry, and I was working for a lubricant additive manufacturer when I started to develop my thinking around electric vehicles versus internal combustion engine powered vehicles, such that I had convinced myself that internal combustion engines were actually cleaner than electric vehicles. And I had some studies that had given me some indication towards that, but I had never done my due diligence to validate whether either of those two studies were true. And I'd never taken a step back to look at it objectively to see, okay, obviously I have some motivation working in the special chemical industry, coming from someone who worked in the oil industry, that it would be good for me for a lot of different reasons, especially not having to have any conflict in my mind. So not having to have a cognitive dissonance occurring in my brain between what I was doing and the industry I was working in, and the fact that internal combustion engines maybe were worse than electric vehicles. So I convinced myself that electric vehicles were worse. And I had a couple data points, a couple studies really with data points in them to help tell me that. And now, if you're familiar with the episodes, you'll remember why and ultimately where my thinking ended up on this and the details of the study. But what this came back to is that I wanted a black and white answer. I wanted it to be definitive. I wanted there to be no ambiguity. But it wasn't that simple. It wouldn't be simple in either direction, because the answer that I ultimately came to is that I don't really know for sure, because there are so many variables between electric vehicles and internal combustion engines, because these things are going out in the real world. And there's so many different things that can happen in the real world, and so many different things that can affect the duty cycle of either car, and how hard you're driving it, and where you're driving it, what the temperature is, and what the ambient humidity is. So there's all these different factors, and then you have to consider conflict minerals and mining and battery disposal and all that bullshit. All of that goes into it. But even taking all that into account, it seems like now, after I really did my due diligence and let my subjective influences go, it seems like electric vehicles are better than internal combustion engine powered vehicles for the environment, which makes sense, but it just seems like a band-aid at first. And I still think to an extent it's a band-aid until you clean up the electrical infrastructure, but it's a band-aid that might be a more powerful band-aid, let's say. Let's say it's a band-aid that's more like stitches, that's really taking care of a pretty big wound. But it's still not definitive. There's still nothing out there, because there are so many variables that there's nothing out there that can definitively say electric vehicles are 100% without a doubt better than internal combustion engine powered vehicles. It's with no qualifiers. That's just it. There's nothing out there that says that. And so because of this, my own views have evolved, because I was able to let go of that need for a definitive answer. So now I realize that, okay, we don't really know for sure, but it's pretty likely. It's more likely. Remember, this goes back to how I encourage people to think kind of like quantum mechanics. It's probability. So the probability is high that electric vehicles are cleaner, overall better for the environment, than internal combustion engine vehicles. That's probably the way it is. And because of this, my views have been able to evolve a little bit, because as I mentioned in another previous episode, for me, I'm all about the performance of cars. And electric vehicles, it's really hard to beat their performance, especially with some of these new models that Tesla's come out with. There's that Plaid that can do 0-60 in under 2 seconds, I believe. Like I said, no notes in front of me, so I think it does it in about 1.8 seconds or something like that, which is just fucking stupid fast. Now, granted, does that drain half your battery? I don't know, but nonetheless, it's impressive. Now, if you want to talk about subjective viewpoints, I think Teslas are hideous. I don't find them to be attractive cars. I think they're pretty boring looking. I think their SUVs look exactly like an egg, so I think they're exceptionally boring, but I'm impressed with the things they're doing. I think I saw a picture. I don't know if it was an actual picture from Tesla or it was an artist rendering, but it was their Roadster. And that thing looks sick, if it really is the way that I saw it. Because I had that supercar look to it, you know, the ones that have the mid-engine design where it's a little bulkier in the back because the engine's back there, and a little bit more like the wedge design, like a Lamborghini or a Ferrari, the way a car is supposed to look, not fucking boring and sterile like the Tesla. But anyway, the point is, on this, is that my views have evolved such that I could see myself owning an electric vehicle, a purely electric vehicle. Probably not a Tesla, because again, even though performance of them is awesome, aesthetically, they're just, I just don't see anything pleasing about them. So I have a Volkswagen Golf. It's a diesel-powered Volkswagen Golf. Gets about 45 miles for a gallon, 46, depending on the day. It's a really impressive, I think, fuel economy. But it's an ugly little car. You know, it's an egg-shaped little turd. I guess it's cute in its own way, but I don't really like it. But I bought it for a reason. It was utilitarian. We got it because it was the backup car for my motorcycle when I couldn't ride it, which is rare in Southern California, but it did happen. Well, now I got rid of the bike, and then we moved downtown. We got rid of the SUV because it didn't make sense to have two cars. So here we are now with Trash Panda, as we've named it, our little Volkswagen Golf hatchback. But if I'm going to get another car and I'm going to purposely get one, I'm not going to get something that I can't stand to look at again. So sorry, Tesla. Maybe if the Roadster is as good looking as you've shown it, then perhaps you could have a customer in the future. And he's got to stop being a douche. Nonetheless, I could see myself getting a different electric vehicle. And ultimately, my views on electric vehicles have changed because I've been able to let go of that human need for definitive answers. Okay, and that's the whole point of this podcast again. And so with that, we're going to leave that topic behind. I'm going to take a little pause, take a drink, and then we are going to move on to a different topic. And as I started to take this drink and realized that the reason I'm doing it is because my mouth is super dry, it got me thinking that there's something else that I can talk about today. It's amazing what happens when you just kind of get rid of the script and just let things go. I shouldn't say a script. I'm not sitting here reading to you most of the time, but I do have pretty detailed notes. But today I'm just kind of letting the brain go, and I'm, you know, it's flowing. Things are coming to me and I'm sober, which is amazing. Usually I like to have no, I'm just kidding. But but I was sitting there with my dry mouth, and so I've come to a couple of realizations. I've shared with you, dear listener, here and there throughout the different episodes of the podcast about the issues that I'm having with my voice and how towards the end of a podcast I'm running out of steam, and how it led to me not being able to perform in the band for a while. Although we are trying to get back into that. We should be having our first rehearsal pretty soon. Some things have unfortunately gotten in the way and kept us from doing it, but we should be having our first rehearsal shortly because now I'm undergoing this physical therapy. But I wanted to share something with you because there's some other things that I've been changing. So I'm going to confide something in you, and that even your shithead host here who preaches objectivity is still, of course, victim to subjectivity and victim to being a fucking human. And one thing that I'm a victim of is the fact that I don't really like losing my hair. So I have long hair, and I had long hair when I was young. I really liked it. I got rid of it when I got into the corporate world and as I got older, and I felt like I had to. And some of the companies I worked for, I probably wouldn't have gotten hired had I looked like a hippie. But I was able to grow my hair out now because when I was working for my previous company, they weren't so haughty-taughty. And just a little bit more laid back, you know, the Southern California type style. And then after I left there, I said I wanted to keep my long hair. But what's unfortunate is that my body decided that it didn't want hair. And so my hair was drifting back a little bit. And so I started taking finasteride. I know it's a bit embarrassing, but, you know, I did it because I liked having long hair and I didn't really like the idea of going bald just yet. Well, I'm going to share a couple things with you about that. So finasteride, it kind of did slow things down, but it didn't really work all that well to stop it completely. I didn't get any really new growth, and the hair is still falling out. But the thing is that I was so focused on wanting there to be an answer to this, wanting to say that, okay, finasteride is going to fix my hair loss, that I, your shithead host, the clean thinker himself, who supposedly researches everything, I never researched finasteride. I didn't even check the mechanism of it. Like, for fuck's sake, talking about doing your own research, I did none. All right, I don't know, whatever, you know, it seems fine. So I started taking it. Well, apparently, finasteride comes with some potential side effects, and a few of those you, as my dear listener, have heard about and experienced. I just didn't realize it was potentially caused by this stupid little shithead pill I was taking. So one of those is dry mouth. And it's ridiculous that maybe it was some sort of a mental block that I didn't even put two and two together, but about the time that I started taking those pills, all of a sudden, my fucking mouth's dry all the time. But at the same time, we had made some changes at our previous house. We'd put in a water softener and a UV filter and what the hell those things called? The reverse osmosis system. And so I was drinking that. So almost at the exact same time all that happened, I started taking the pill. So I wrote it off to the water change. Makes sense. Because my wife said that she had experienced some dry mouth too, and I don't think she was stealing my pills. So I said, okay, it's probably the water. Well, here I am now, wanting to get back into singing, undergoing physical therapy. And so I started doing some research about this finasteride. And while I didn't find any definitive links between vocal issues and finasteride use, as far as messing with your voice, there are some data out there that show that it can make your voice go higher. Well, I didn't have that happen, but I did find some anecdotal reports, numerous ones, in fact, of people who had lost power to their voice, singers, right, who had lost power to their voice, lost durability to their voice, and their longevity. And I thought, well, fuck, it makes sense that I'm experiencing this, and it makes sense that there wouldn't be any studies out there, because how many people out there who are singers do you think are taking finasteride? It's probably a small group. And so the ones that are experiencing symptoms, which is probably a small amount, why would that justify any further study? Unless, because unfortunately, university studies and things like that, they need to have funding. And so for funding to occur, well, there has to be a big enough problem. There has to be a legitimate reason for somebody to do it. So there's probably no studies to validate this, but there are enough anecdotal stories now that I'm thinking, shit. And then that got me thinking further. Holy fuck. So I wanted to take this stuff to keep my hair from falling out. But then I started getting acne right about the same time. And I didn't even get acne when I was a teenager. I was one of those fortunate kids that I'd get a zit a month maybe. Well, here I am now in my late 30s, breaking out like a fucking 17-year-old. I'm like, what? Or a 13-year-old even. Like, what in the fuck is happening? So I talked to my doctor about it. And she prescribed me this cream. It's like an antibiotic cream that I've been putting on my forehead that barely keeps it at bay. It keeps me from looking 13, more like a 17-year-old. So yeah, thanks. Lovely. But now I'm sitting here realizing I'm fucking with my hormones. Because I went and I started looking at the mechanism of action for this little cocksucker finasteride. And what it does is it binds to some of your androgenic hormones in the male body. So it's fucking with my hormones, which of course leads to acne, as we all know, and can fuck with your voice and all this other shit. And it can make you tired. So I'm sitting there taking this shit because I wanted it to be a definitive answer to a problem. I wanted it to take care of something that was just completely aesthetic, something that's completely driven by ego. Really, that's what it comes down to, is that it was driven by my ego because I didn't want to lose my hair. And so I've decided I'm going to stop taking this stuff. So I'm going to probably go through some hormone changes a little bit. So, you know, if I start crying during any podcast, just, you know, write it off. It's fine. It's okay to cry. I'll try to keep it just to a weep instead of a full-on bawl. But if not, you know, I won't even edit it out. I'll let you guys go on the ride with me. Okay. But I wanted to talk to you about that. I wanted to confide that in you, you know, establish more of the trust that I have with you, dear listeners, between you and your shithead host. But if you're taking finasteride and you find yourself sucking at all sorts of other things, just stop. Let your hair fall out. It'll be fine. So I'll probably be shaving my head shortly. Maybe I'll do some sort of social media post about it because you started following me on social media, right? Because come on, I fucking hate social media. So at least if I get a couple more followers, it'll help make it feel like it makes sense and like there's purpose behind it. And because I don't like it. It's just a cesspool, especially Facebook. It is the Walmart of social media, the Dollar General of social media. It's just awful. It's just so fucking bad. But anyway, I'm going off on a tangent here. We could talk about social media all day. And actually, I'm going to write a chapter about social media in the second book of the Dirty Thoughts Let's Talk series, which I swear I am going to write someday. But I think that chapter could take on a book of its own because it's such just a fucking cesspool of garbage. Anywho, We're going to move on. We're going to move on to another topic. And this other topic is important to me because of the new type of corporate training that I've been telling you about that for the clean thinkers. We're going to go out to specifically start off with places in the hospitality industry who have been having some trouble with sexual harassment and just, you know, not people not being represented and just kind of, you know, which is weird, especially in the craft beer industry, because when you think of craft beer, at least for me, I think of kind of, you know, progressive thinking people socially anyway, very socially progressive and welcoming, but apparently it's still a boys club and guys acting like a bunch of fucking assholes. And so we're trying to help with that with some of the training. But one of the things that I want to talk about today is that even those things are not black and white, and people want everything to be black and white. They want everything to be definitive. And when it comes to these things, it can't always be definitive, because even as far as the transgender idea and topic goes, you have people on one side, they're like, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear anything about transgender people. You're born this way. That's what you are. Well, that's, you're going too far black and white. And you have the other people on the other side that they say, hey, if somebody says that they are a female, but they appear outwardly male in every other way, then you have to just say, fuck, okay, whatever. Well, it's not fucking that simple all the time. Okay. And so it all comes back to the fact that just the transgender idea and gender itself is not that simple, okay? It's not black and white. It's not just male or female, because remember, we talked about this a little bit. People are saying, well, okay, well, I'll define gender as chromosome. If you have two X chromosomes, then you are a female. If you have an X and a Y, then you are a male. But it's not always that simple, because there are cases of people who have female chromosomes that are outwardly male in every other way. They have male type testosterone. They have dicks. Okay. And it goes the opposite direction too, such that people could not, maybe not have both XX chromosomes and still be able to birth a child. So what the fuck then? Chromosomal gender, sex, is not as straightforward as people want it to be, or whether you have certain equipment downstairs, because you could have both sets of equipment. Now, granted, those are a small subset of the population, but they are there. And then, of course, with the hormones, is that you have women athletes that are going out there that look female, that everything about them appears female. Maybe they're a little bit more muscular, but their hormones are through the roof. And oftentimes they're saying, okay, well, you're taking steroids. And oftentimes they're not, that they're being persecuted for having male-type hormones. So does that define gender if it's male-type hormones? I would argue no, because they could, then it goes back to the chromosome thing. They have female chromosomes, but they have male hormones. Okay, so the point is, gender is not that clear, okay? So it's not simple in either direction. That's just the core of the topic. It's not simple in either direction. So then when you talk about specific instances, we can go back to athletics. And again, I'm going to reiterate to you that I don't care about athletics. I used to, and then I evolved my thinking on athletics such that I can go to a Padres game and I can enjoy it and I can appreciate baseball for what it is. But I don't care if they lose. In fact, sorry, San Diego friends, I like when they lose, because now that I live downtown, I don't have to put up with the bullshit during the postseason. More fucking people clogging up downtown and being loud and stupid. When there's not a game, it's great. And plus, they have that little park there that has a playground. And usually when games go on, that gets closed the day of, the next day, and then I can't go play with my daughter because it's stupid baseball. And I know that the stadium wouldn't be there if it wasn't for baseball. But the point is that I think we as a society put too much on athletics and team sports and riding so much of our emotional well-being and our feelings and how we go about our day based on something that's completely out of our control, usually by a bunch of overpaid babies. Doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But this is a topic where the transgender discussion gets brought up quite a bit, where you have transgender women coming out and beating the shit out of cisgender women in a lot of cases. But in a lot of these cases, these transgender women, it's not as simple as people want it to be, because they might be chromosomally male, but they're hormonally female, or vice versa. So the point is that it's not that simple. And I don't know what the right answer is, but people want it to be black and white. They're saying if you are defined as a man in these definitions that I'm making, then you cannot compete in women's sports. But those definitions, again, how do you define it? Is it chromosomal? Is it what you're packing between your legs? Is it hormonal? What is it? Is it behavioral? I think it's a very difficult thing to pinpoint definitively. And so it's one of these topics that is it's kind of tough. I really don't know a good answer for it. And I'm glad that I'm not in a position where I have to come up with that or that I have to put any thought into it. Okay. But there is another topic that I want to talk about, which is prisons. I also touched on this in a different episode, in that what has happened in California, where it's almost like a no questions asked type thing, where if you're a male and you are in prison, you can say, hey, I identify as a female. And instances of this have happened where they've been transferred then to women's prisons and women have been hurt or they've been raped or I don't know if they've been murdered, how far it's gone. But ultimately, a situation like this is it's a lot more delicate, right? Athletics, okay, big deal. Nobody's going to die. But in this case with prison, yeah, people actually can die. And so you have these men that are claiming to be females and then they get sent to a prison and they were just pretending and then people get hurt. And then you have transgender women who are truly transgender women. But how do you define and how do you draw the line there? For me, I don't know. That's a tough one. But for I would say that if it were me and I were making the rules in this one, I would err on the side of caution and err on the side of safety. So if you had somebody that before prison was identifying as a female and then the judge said, fuck that, I'm going to sentence you as a male because you have balls, and then they sent them to a male prison, I don't think that's right. Okay, I think that person then should be given the benefit of the doubt and be sent to a women's prison because they had been living that life, they had already transitioned, and they said that this is who I am. Okay, but if you have this giant, muscular, tattooed-covered dude who was arrested for, let's say, rape of women, cisgender women, and this cisgender male who had been a cisgender male their whole life gets sent to prison and then decide, you know what? I'm pretty sure I'm a woman. And then they get sent to a woman's prison. That was a bad choice. Okay. That was a bad choice on the people that let that happen. So even this topic, it can't just be black or white. There are subtleties in everything because the idea of transgenderism in and of itself is a subtlety. It is a small portion of the population that I'm going to say needs to have their rights be observed. Okay. If you don't like that, if you think that's bullshit, too fucking bad, because there are people who feel a certain way and there's nothing that they can do about it when it is a legitimate thing. When you're faking to go to prison, that's not legitimate. Or to go to a woman's prison, that's not a legitimate thing. But these people's rights should be observed. But you cannot then sacrifice a greater population of women and put them into danger just to say, okay, well, you know what? We have to have this black and white view of it, that if you say that you're a transgender woman, then you are. It can't always be like that. Along those same lines, as I was reading an article recently in Scientific American. I don't know if I've talked about it too much in the podcast. I talk about it in the book. I'm a big advocate of Scientific American. It's really great because they cover all sorts of different journal articles and all sorts of new and cool science. And it's often written by the researchers themselves. So, and they write it in a way that it's a little more accessible to people that aren't scientists in that specific field. Because when you're reading about quantum physics, if they just write it in math, unless you've taken differential equations, that's not going to make any sense. And even if you have, it's still probably not going to make a lot of sense because that shit's fucking complex. But when they write it for Scientific American, they make it a little bit more accessible. So it's really nice. But I was reading an article in Scientific American about autoimmune disorders and how most of the autoimmune disorders out there happen to women. 80% of autoimmune disorders happen to women. And historically, the funding for those has been shit. There hasn't been a lot of funding for research. But with the women's rights movement, more funding has gone towards these autoimmune disorders, things such as lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. And there's another big one that's slipping my mind. But anyway, these, by and large, affect women, cisgender women, way more than men, okay? And now with the women's rights movement, it's been getting more funding. What I fear and what I could see happening, and this might be out of line, and if it is, I'm sorry, I'm just spitballing here, is that if we move too far to a land of sex fluidity, okay, let's not say gender fluidity, but sex fluidity, where we forget that there are biological differences between your typical cisgender male and your typical cisgender female, that you could take a step backward for cisgender women who have been an underrepresented population for a very long time and are still, but they've made strides. And if you disregard the differences between them, I could see a world in which then people who are shitheads could justify taking funding away from research that has been helping women, cisgender women. And I don't want that to happen. What I'm trying to get at is that there can't be this black and white, when, especially when it is an issue of subtlety. And it is an issue that by of its nature is a subtlety. It is a difference. It is a difference that only affects the small portion of the population. And we have to be careful that when we're talking about things that affect a very, very small portion of the population, that we don't end up screwing over another large portion of the population. In this case, again, cisgender women. Okay, so what I'm getting at is that for transgender people, I fully support them. I do. I consider myself an ally. A big part of that is this training that I'm trying to do. But the training that I'm trying to do for the corporate customers of the Clean Thinkers is, and that we are in the process of launching, is not to be black and white, but to understand the gray areas and to respect other people, but understand that part of that respect is understanding the situation and not trying to make things black or white, understanding the differences between us, acknowledging those, but acknowledging that this is a world in which we need to coexist, and we need to coexist with a reasonable expectations of each other. Okay? Because ultimately, it comes down to balance, which we've talked about so many times in this podcast, and then achieving a place where everyone can be represented, but we're not sacrificing the rights of any single group. Okay? Like, again, cisgender women who have been historically underrepresented. And I might be out of line with that. That may be an unrealistic situation. But we can't forget biology just as much as we can't forget psychology, just as much as we can't forget DNA and our chromosomes and what they make us end up being one way or another, or our hormones, all sorts of different things. And I can tell you all about hormones now because mine are all fucked up because of the stupid fucking pill I took. So another topic that I don't think that there is a good black and white answer for it. I think we're going to leave that topic behind us for now. And hopefully it was insightful to at least hear a different perspective and to understand kind of where my thinking is on something like this. And I'm sure that some people who would listen to it would take it the wrong way. And that's fine. Unfortunately, the people that take it the wrong way are the people that expect everything to be black and white. And those are the people that are going to get really pissed about the next two topics that I'm going to talk about too. And the next one is cops and minorities, specifically black people. So people want their always to be the black and white, right? In this case, yeah, very literally. But the thing is that this one, there are also subtleties where it's people are saying Black Lives Matter, which they do, 100%. And people say Blue Lives Matter. Well, the thing is that being blue is a job. It's not something, it's a choice. It's not something that you are born into being. You're not born into being a cop. You might say you're born to be a cop, but you're not. You've chosen to be a cop. Nobody chooses to be black, except for that one Rachel, whatever the fuck her name is, that pretended to be black. That fucking asshole. But and a lot of the white guys that I went to school with in high school, I remember, really tried to be black too. They did a terrible job at it. But the thing about the cops and minorities is that people want to blame a person. But it is a person that's making a choice. Okay, it is a police officer that has made a choice, but they're making a human choice, and they are in a system. Okay, they are in a position that I would never ever want to be in. I would not be a cop because it is a fucking terrible situation to be in, because there is a tension between the black community and police in many, many places. And the reason is because of a system of inequality that has been allowed to fester for a very, very long time. And I wish I could do this as much justice as look up. Jon Stewart wrote something about this, you know, the former Daily Show host, who he's a big, big supporter of the police. He's a big supporter of firemen, and he's always advocating for like 9/11, the survivors, the 9/11 first responders, who are fucking piece of shit government continues to try and take away their rights time and time again. And he's always out there saying, hey, fuckos, you say never forget, you know, 9/11. Well, you're forgetting the people that went and risked their lives to save all these other people because you're scumbag, overpaid politicians. But he wrote this beautiful piece on it saying pretty much what I'm trying to say here, just not nearly as eloquently, is that you can try and take a side on this one, but ultimately it comes down to a system has put these two groups of people at odds with one another. And there's no nice way out of this until you get to the core of it, which is not the cops, which is not the minorities who are being shot by the cops. It is we as a society who have sat back and just kind of let this happen and been okay with it, because it's not okay. But I could not imagine being a police officer and being in let's say, an urban area and having this nonstop tension between me and the Black community. And as a human being, you can see how that would put you in a situation where you would be more likely to respond in a way that is very, very negative, and then that could lead to somebody being hurt, being beaten, or being murdered. And I'm not saying it's okay, but it's not okay at all. But what I'm saying is that we forget the humanness, that we expect cops to be robots, and that we expect Black people, in many cases, to just lie down and take it. Because, well, I've told you before, I've been in trouble with the police numerous times in my life because I've been a very, very bad boy. And I am beyond doubt positive that if I were a Black man, I'd be dead. The data suggests it's 2.5 times more likely that I would be dead because I haven't always been that cooperative. But if I were a Black, I mean, I punched a cop. I thought about it, but I know I'm not proud of that, but I haven't been what you would call submissive. And we expect that a Black person is just supposed to be submissive. But why? If a white person isn't submissive, I mean, we have mass shooters that have been taken down and arrested, but you have Black guys with cap guns that get shot. And the reason is because of this fucking tension between these two groups of people that we have been complicit in allowing to happen. So I don't have a good answer for this. This is a fucking hard one. And I don't have any good answers about systemic racism. But for me, the best thing that I can do as a clean thinker is try and help educate people about racism and help educate people through the clean thinkers training about subjectivity versus objectivity, because racist thoughts and sexist thoughts, all these things come back to subjectivity. They have no basis in objectivity. They cannot. It's impossible. So if you can get people to recognize those subjective thoughts that they're having, those subjective tendencies, then they could begin to see why they have these thoughts and how systemic racism has been allowed to proliferate and been allowed to continue. And now why we have people saying Blue Lives Matter and Black Lives Matter on either side of this divide that feel like they have to be against one another, but they don't have to be. It doesn't have to be cops versus Black people. If we could find a way to get rid of the underlying system that has caused them to be at odds with one another, then guess what? There wouldn't be these issues anymore. I hope that makes sense. So I don't think I got the resolution out of that I wanted to get to, but what I wanted to touch on that is that depending on what side of an argument you're on, if you've placed yourself on a side of an argument, I've put myself on the side of sense in this case. What I think to be sense, which is that Black lives do matter. And that doesn't mean that I have to be anti-cop. I think when you say things like Blue Lives Matter against the Black Lives Matter, I think by nature of saying that you are taking a side, because cops aren't being murdered left and right by Black people, right? It's Black people that are being murdered. But anyway, there's really no Black or white answer about that. And so I'm going to go on to one more topic today. And if I have any listeners still sticking around, if not, you're gonna probably leave soon, because I'm gonna talk about another topic I've mentioned many, many times, and this one is abortion. And I've talked about abortion a lot, and the reason I talk about it is because it really matters to me. It matters to me a lot because I think it's a perfect example of people's subjective beliefs interfering with other people's rights, and it really fucking makes me mad to no end that there's still an argument about this, that it's just, like, I can't believe people are still challenging this because of their religious beliefs or whatever. I'm not saying that I enjoy the idea of fetuses being aborted, but it's none of my fucking business is ultimately what it comes down to. But the reason I want to talk about this today is not because of the gray area around abortion. I don't think there is a gray area around a woman's rights. But where there is a gray area, I think that unfortunately many people look at black and white, is where the man's role is in this, where the father's role is in this. I know that some people aren't going to like this. But again, let me tell you, I unequivocally support a woman's right to choose. But what happens is, in the case of consensual sex, so forgetting rape or anything, if you rape somebody and impregnate them, or it's incest or anything like that, you don't get to participate in the conversation. But if you are a man, okay, who has had consensual, cisgender man, let's say, or somebody who's capable of impregnating another person. Let's say that you did that and you were both involved with it consensually. There's no hands being forced here. But you weren't planning on having a baby, okay? That's the important part. You had sex, okay. And the woman says she wants to have the baby. But you as a male, by virtue of her making that choice, you have no choice but to then suffer the consequences, which is financial and supporting otherwise. Because you know that if kids grow up without fathers, there's consequences to that. I can attest to it. So you're kind of roped into this, and you just need to deal with the consequences. And that's kind of what society's black and white view of this has been for a very long time. That you, if you are responsible enough to engage in sexual intercourse, and you're responsible enough to deal with the consequences. But now if you're a woman who's become pregnant in a consensual relationship, which again, I support your ability to do this, you can just have an abortion. And you don't have to deal with the consequences of those actions, which is your right. But the person who impregnated you is ultimately at your whim. So if you decide to have a baby, then they are left with those consequences. So they do not get to remove the consequences. They have no choice but to suffer the consequences. And listen, I don't want to, men have had it pretty easy for a long time, continue to still have it easy. So I'm not sitting here like preaching men's rights or anything like this, because we have lots of them and we're doing just fine, especially white, straight, cisgender men. It's very easy for us. But it's an interesting dichotomy that we are allowing women to have this choice, which they should have, but then men just don't get a say in it at all. I don't think a man should have any ability to tell a woman what to do with her body. I don't at all. But if the woman decides to have the baby, why should the man then be handcuffed to that? That if she can rid herself of the consequences, why can a man not do that as well? So something to think about. I'm not saying you have to take a side either way, but the fact that one person in the consensual relationship can completely unilaterally get rid of the consequences, which again, I support. What about the other side, that you have a father of the impregnator who is just, okay, you want to abort the baby, then okay, I support you. You want to have it? I support you too. But now I really do have to support you and the baby, and that's fucked up. I think it's a very interesting dichotomy. I just want you to think about it. I want you to think about that and, you know, just consider black and white and then these gray areas, and think about all the topics, because I realized that I thought I would struggle to fill up the time without having any notes, and I've rambled, and we're over our 40-minute mark, and so I think I'm just going to leave you with those thoughts and say thank you for coming along on this this edition, this volume 4 of Dirty Talk, which was our episode number 18 of Dirty Thoughts Let's Talk. So Dirty Talk series, I think I'm going to try this more often. I wish you guys could give me some direct feedback and let me know what you think about this. So, you know, if you want to give a rating or, you know, comment on social media or something like that, shoot me an email. I don't know. Just I'd be interested to know what your thoughts are about this format of Dirty Talk, because I enjoyed it. But at the same time, the problem is I'll probably have to do a lot of editing when I finish, because I know I probably wasn't paying attention and said some things that I shouldn't have, and I don't want to make anybody too mad. But anyway, we don't have any show notes for you to check with this time, because again, everything I just kind of pulled out of my ass. So obviously everything was just to lie. It was just a lie. I made all this up. You, to validate anything I said, you should go do your own research on YouTube and Facebook, because fucking Facebook, God, I hate that place. And given how much we humans can't stand discomfort, and some of these things were uncomfortable, I'm sure many of you will go ahead and validate the things that I've said. Now, our next episode, which again will come out in 2 weeks, it's not going to be weekly. Maybe someday we'll go back to the weekly format, but for now, we're still doing every 2 weeks. This is going to be a theme-based episode, which covers September's monthly theme of finance. Hubba, 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 money, money, money. If you don't know where that's from, because I say it time and time again, if you don't know where it's from, you should be ashamed of yourself. But if you don't, that is from the original and only Batman you should ever watch, the one with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. God, he was a good Joker. Just a great all-around actor and crazy human being. You gotta love Jack. And maybe if you do come around to the finance episode, you'll learn something. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about yet. But, you know, maybe you'll learn something. Maybe you won't. But What I will certainly learn is how to better plan when the podcasts are released, because it is not lost on me that when I'm releasing the September theme podcast, it's going to be in the fucking middle of October. So yeah, the episode will publish on, I believe, October 17th. So I guess we'll shoot to publish October's theme episode on Halloween. So we're going to have to do two theme episodes in a row. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. But in the meantime, thank you for coming to this new format episode of the Dirty Thoughts Let's Talk podcast. Take care. I look forward to speaking with you in a couple weeks. Cheers.